your turn to be afraid.
Are you a fan of things that go bump in the night? Chills up your spine, paralyzed by fright. Thrilled by horror at the center of a chat. Then welcome to the Nerds from the Crypt podcast.
Thank you for joining us here on Nerds from the Crypt, where we interview indie horror creators about their upcoming and ongoing horror projects. A big thank you to every single one of you who's keeping up with the podcast, and we would love to hear what you think about the episodes that have been coming out. If you or anyone you know is an indie creator that would like to come onto the podcast to talk about their horror projects, you can contact us on social media by searching at NerdsFTC on Facebook, Instagram, Threads, and X. You can also email us at nerdsftc@gmail.com, but the fastest way to get to us is on social media. For today's episode, we will be talking with Mike Sullivan about his novella, Dogs. Tom Richmond is returning home to attend his mother's funeral, but as soon as he arrives home, his parents' dog decides to bite and viciously attack him. Tom is now in the fight for his life as he notices that every single dog in the neighborhood has turned their back on their masters. But to hear more about dogs, let's go to our conversation Greg and I had with Mike.
Sure. My name is Mike Sullivan. I live in Massachusetts, about a half hour south of Boston. My day job is a video documentary editor, which I've been doing for a long time, but I also write horror fiction. My most recent book that I just mentioned is published with Muddy Paw Press. It's called Dogs, and it's coincidentally a coincidence that my title is similar to the press, the publisher's title, name.
So how did you get into the horror genre and writing?
I've always enjoyed stories and storytelling ever since I was a kid. And I got into movies first. I've been a movie fanatic basically my whole life. That's how I got into editing. I went to film school in Boston, but I've always wanted to write fiction. And I used to try to do it. I would take classes, and it just seemed to be just outside my grasp. And then I took a workshop about not that long ago, maybe 5 or 6 years ago. It was before COVID and stuff. Probably a little longer than that. But anyway, with an author named Christopher Golden, who horror fans might know, and Jim Moore. They used to run this workshop up in Massachusetts, northern Massachusetts. And for some reason, I don't know if it was right place, right time, or the way they talked about writing, it finally just kind of clicked in my head. It sunk in. And I've been writing fiction, horror fiction, ever since. And I've had a couple of things published, and it's been really exciting. The first thing I published, I self-published, was called the funny thing was, I'm kind of rambling a little bit, but I didn't understand at the time the actual word count limitations of what makes a short story versus a novella versus a novel, you know. So I wrote a story that I just wrote the story, and it kind of fell in this nebulous area. It was too long to be a short story, but too short to be a real novella. I guess you would call it a novelette. And I was having trouble finding a home for it. Chris Golden and Jim wrote it. I started it in their workshop. And Chris Golden has this Merrimack Valley Book Festival every Halloween. And he said if I self-published this book, this novelette, he would give me a table at his book festival. And so I had never self-published. I didn't know it. So another friend of mine helped me with that, and that is on Amazon. It's called The Bugs Come Out at Night. Which was my first experience in actually having a physical book I could hold in my hand and someone give to someone and they would read it and stuff. It was very cool. That novelette ended up being also accepted a year later in an anthology from Crone Girls Press called Stories We Tell After Midnight, Volume 2. And that was exciting. And then I had another short story published by Sinister Smile Press in a different anthology called If I Die Before I Wake, Volume 6, Tales of the Dark Deep. And that was an apostolatory, I think they call it, story, where it's all emails and diary entries transcriptions of videos and is the whole story.
Kind of like that the was first cool. Dracula, right? The first version.
Exactly. And then Dogs came out 2 years ago, in April. And then I have another short coming out this October with Dark Speculations in an anthology called Tales of Various Shapes and Shadows, Volume 1. I love all these titles that they come up with for anthologies.
Yeah.
And that's coming out in October.
So let's talk about real quick about Dogs. That's the one that I was able to read, and then you said you have a new story coming out, right? So let's talk about those two, but let's talk about Dogs first. I really enjoyed it. Where did this come from? Where did the idea, I guess, for Dogs appear?
Well, it's one of those questions. Where do you get your ideas, right? It's the Dogs came to me, and it's kind of tricky to explain it because I don't want to give the ending of the story away, but the last line of the story came to me first, the actual last line, and I kind of cribbed it from Shirley Jackson. If you're going to steal from the best, right?
Right.
And so I came up with that last line, and then that kind of stuck with me. It was that line was coming, bouncing around in my head, and I tried to then reverse engineer a story that would lead to that line. The line, it's about dogs, and so I came up with a scenario of that would lead to that line about dogs kind of being deciding they've had enough and doing something. But once again, it was a small idea, so I knew it wouldn't be a novel length. But it did end up being, I thought it might be a short, and it ended up being longer than a short when I finally put it to page.
It's funny how they grow, those ideas just kind of spiral out or turn into these bigger picture. Like you just see the small thing and you're like, oh, that's cool. I can do that. And then it's like, I just built a whole entire world. What did I do?
Yep. And yeah. They take the characters and everything they take on their own lives and they end up telling you their stories and you just kind of transcribe it.
Yeah.
Well, that's what Gregory's saying, right? Is I'm not a writer, so Greg is, but I'm not. So I guess I'm trying to make sure I understand what you're saying. But once you start writing their story, they tell you how long the story is going to be.
Exactly. Yep. You just write it down, and if you're lucky, it just keeps coming. And then sometimes you get stuck in the middle or something like that, and you're like, oh, come on, you got to tell me what else. You're asking them to tell you what happens next.
Well, I mean, that's where you're have a good character, right? When you're able to like, well, what would happen then? And because you've fleshed out the character so much that they're able to tell you what should come next.
Yep. The character that I put in this situation, he, facets of him started to come out more and more as I wrote, draft after draft, and finally gave him, he ended up becoming, this real person in my head who had a background and a life, and that's when it gets really, you're firing on all cylinders when that kind of stuff happens.
Yeah.
So, you said it came out 2 years ago. I'm not too sure how publishing works and all that. So I don't know if they do any type of like crowdfunding or how does that happen?
This had a kind of an interesting road to getting published. I first knew I'm still relative. I consider myself very new to publishing, to writing and stuff. But when you're, even unless you're like Stephen King or something, there's no guarantee that you're going to find a publisher for your story. Right. So, I wrote the story, had, friends read it and beta readers and that kind of thing, and got it in a nice, solid package, and then sent it out. And I would look for publishers that were interested in novellas from horror writers and that kind of thing. I'm on various email lists, and there's websites and Facebook groups and, that type of thing where you can find publishers looking for new material. And I found one, sent it out. They liked it, sent me back a contract, and that's where you start, you know, now you're talking dollars and cents and contracts and things like that and rights and stuff like that, and you don't want to sign stuff, sign a document that you haven't fully read, and you don't want to sign away things that you think you should keep as far as, like, you know, movie and TV rights. I mean, it sounds crazy to think about, but you want to make sure you have all that stuff. And once again, my friend Chris Golden really helped me out. He's so cool about helping out new writers and stuff, because he was helped out when he was starting out. He's, you know, paying it forward and stuff, and he took a look at the contract and was like, this, can I curse on your show,
yeah,
Saul?
Yeah.
He said, he said, this contract is shit. Don't sign it. So I requested a couple of changes, and that publisher, I'm not going to say who it was, didn't want to change the contract, so we couldn't come to an agreement, so I didn't go with them, and it was kind of discouraging, and because I was excited that I was going to have my novella published. So once I was back at square one and found another publisher who called Muddy Paw Press, and at the time I didn't know anything about them. I sent them the book. They liked it a lot. They really, you know, they didn't want to make any editorial changes. There was like, you know, maybe some grammatical things, a couple of slight tweaks to the story, nothing major. And it turns out it's the press is one guy, young guy, and he actually lives out here in Massachusetts. He lives in Western Mass. I'm on the eastern part of the state, and Massachusetts is not that big of a state, but so just say that was just coincidentally, and he was good to work with. We, you know, he had no problems with making adjustments to the contract that I wanted, and we came to an agreement, and then the book came out. So that was the way it went for me, which is my first real experience with a, you know, quote unquote traditional publisher, even though it's a tiny little press in Western Massachusetts.
So talking about the story itself, you kind of came, you know, you kind of already talked about the, I guess where it came from, but does it have any personal ties to you, the character or anything like that?
Well, I should give a little plot synopsis of what the story is about for our your listeners. The story is about a guy named Tom who travels on his motorcycle from Pennsylvania back to Massachusetts to attend his mom's funeral. His mom has passed away. He's got an estranged relationship with his dad, and he's hoping that by coming home and they can mourn his mom and repair his relationship with his dad. And when he gets home to Mass, his parents live in a gated community. There's only one way in and out to this neighborhood. And he gets there late at night because he just drove straight up from Pennsylvania. And when he gets there, he finds that all the dogs in the neighborhood have killed everybody except the children of the neighborhood. And he finds a couple of kids who need his help. He decides he's going to get them out of the neighborhood, but there's only the one way out. And the dogs don't want him to leave. Mm-mm. So that's the basic plot of the story. And as far as having, it doesn't have any personal, you know, my mom is still alive. I don't ride a motorcycle. I have dogs as pets. I didn't have dogs growing up. So the whole thing is basically, you know, from my imagination. The character of Tom, I don't think he's very much like me, so it's not like there's any autobiographical part of that, other than I would hope I would act the way he acts in if I were ever to find myself in that kind of situation. I hope I would help people who need help. But it was really fun to be in his head and try to create sense of suspense and terror and horror and a couple of, you know, hopefully some, if not comedy, some parts to kind of let the readers take their breath a little bit before the next horrible canine carnage.
Big thing, yeah.
What I like about some of these stories, when they're, especially when they're shorter, this is not too long, not too short. I was able to read it pretty quickly. What I like about that is when you're dropped into a situation, you don't have all the explanation before, you don't have all the explanation afterwards, because I feel like sometimes you get bogged down in details as to the why and to a resolution and all that. You brought up Stephen King, my favorite author. I think his short stories, even though I know some people do not enjoy them as much, I like them because they don't have to get bogged down in all the detail. As far as explaining the reason why something is happening, you're just put in a situation, your character needs to deal with it.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. It's if done correctly, and King is not only a master of the epic thousand page doorstop books, he also his short fiction is incredible, and other authors who could do this type of short fiction, you're reading the short story, but you also know that there's still a big world outside of the story. So even though the story might be contained in this one little part, a good one gives you ideas, or realizes that you're part that the these characters do live in a bigger world, whatever it is and stuff. And so you don't need to have, like you say, you don't need to have the exact A, B, and C of why this is happening at this time to these people and stuff, but you still know that there is more to it that your imagination can kind of think about.
Yeah.
I think what happens is when you get too much information into it, you start limiting what you're able to do later on, if you want to come back to it or not.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, exactly. This story, My Story Dogs, when I was trying to think of, why this is, like I said, why this is happening, why the dogs in this neighborhood, it actually opened up a bigger, and at the end of the story, it does leave. I've had more than one person say, oh, I want more of this world, are you going to do a sequel and that kind of thing. And I hadn't thought about it. I consider it over, the story's done, because the story was about Tom. But there is more, probably, if I wanted to, I could think of something, something struck me, I could go back into that world and do another story with different characters and stuff, because it leaves it open, kind of. Not that I'm not saying that there's some open, it has an ending and closure, but there's still, I could return
the other
to
stories
it
in the world.
If, mm-hmm. Exactly. That's, yep, exactly.
I mean, people don't talk about ducks enough. So, I mean,
killer ducks.
Yeah, similar setup, just with ducks.
You might be onto something, Greg.
I'm all about helping. I give you an idea, you run with it. That's what I want to see. Duck death. I mean, death by ducks. That's ducks are delicious. Anyways, moving on.
So right now, if someone wanted to go out and get dogs, where would they be able to go and purchase this the book?
Well, it's on Amazon, Mike Sullivan Dogs. If you're anyone in the Boston, Massachusetts, New England area, I'm going to be appearing at a book fair called I'm looking at the flyer for it right now, called the Spooktastic Book Fair. Ooh. That my friend Alyssa is putting on. She's an author, Alyssa Alisi. You can find her on Instagram, Books in the Graveyard. This is the first instance of this book fair she's putting on, but it's going to be on September 30th, Saturday, from 3 to 7 in Boston. And it's cool because they're going to have a lot of authors. I'm, the lowest of the totem pole authors. There's also going to be Gretchen Felker Martin, Eric LaRocca, whose work is incredible, a horror writer right now, Catherine Silva, Robert Atone, and a whole bunch of other authors. Kat Scully is a friend of mine. She's awesome. Tom Reimer, I'm just reading off the thing here, but I'll have books for sale there. And like I said, it's also on Amazon.
And it's available through Kindle as well. So in case yep. you want to read it right then and there, you can actually read it through there as well.
Yep, it's an ebook.
And you mentioned the book fair there. You also had mentioned that there's another story that you're going to be writing.
Oh, I have a story coming out in an anthology in October, from Dark Speculations. And that story is called Welcome to Forever. And it's a vampire story that I started writing in another class I took about specifically about writing vampires. With Stephanie, I have trouble pronouncing her last name. She's a poet and an author. I'm just going to look it up so
I can... Is she a vampire?
No, well, I don't know. She might be.
Might be.
Stephanie Witovich.
Sounds like a vampire name.
It does, doesn't it? I started writing the short in a class with her, and it's kind of an interesting sort of vampire story about a vampire who's been, you know, he's hundreds of years old. He's been killing and drinking blood, and he's really just contemplating, you know, his place in the universe. Is this all there is? You know, existential vampire type stuff.
Existential vampire. Okay, I'm here for this.
Yeah, and that's coming out from Dark Speculations. I'm not sure when in October, but it's coming out, you know, to... capitalize on Halloween and the October spooky season. It's called, I'll say the title again, is called Tales of Various Shapes and Shadows, Volume 1.
And how's it being released? How can we get our hands on it?
That's a good question. I think it's just going to be an e-book anthology. I don't know if there's going to be a print edition. I'm waiting to hear back. They sent me, once again, they were really great to work with. It was a similar thing. They had put out a call for shorts. This particular story I had submitted to several anthologies and stuff, and it was, you know, I was getting, you know, all the rejections that writers get. Mm-hmm. And then, publisher, they dug it and wanted to put it in their book. So, and they didn't have any edits either, other than a couple of, you know, typo or grammatical. You know, I used a comma when I should have used a semicolon or something like that. Mm-hmm. And they were very fun to work with. They sent me the, I guess you call it the an e-proof or something like that, to go, you know, to sign off on everything. And it looks really cool. I'm excited to see it.
Maybe we can get their information. We can talk to them before that comes out. Yeah,
I'll send you their info and the editor's email.
As far as for your like stories that you're coming up with like that, how long does it take for the whole, you know?
to write
not necessarily finish it, but I would think, because I have all these ideas in my head all the time, but I can never put it down because, like I said, I'm not a writer. I would think someone who's able to write has all these stories that, you know, that sometimes they don't go into fruition, right? But then there's other ones where you actually write it down, and then I don't know.
I mean, I can't speak to other writers. I know that it's a lot of when I do talk to my writer friends, the horror writing community up here in New England is really cool. There's a lot of us. There's a cool convention called Necon that happens every July. CampNecon.com. And they call it a camp because it's more like a summer camp. You know, you get together and hang out and have a lot of fun and talk writing and horror and books and stuff like that. But anyway, when I've talked to them about writing, they all have similar responses in that it's so much work. And it's not easy. I mean, it's not like physical labor. You're not, picking heavy things up and putting them down. But it's a lot of work. And for me, it is. I have so many ideas that I've started, and then they just kind of pitter away. Mm-hmm. The ones that I've finished, these ones that are successful, that have people have agreed to publish, and then I have other stories out, you know, that have also been rejected, and I'm waiting to hear back and stuff like that. Those seem to be easier, but still a lot of work. But when I say easier, it seems like I'm able to get to the finish line easier, meaning that the story kind of lends itself to being finished. A lot of my unfinished things, I think I might start them too soon. Like, they need to percolate in my head a little while longer, you know, like keep it in the oven a little bit before you take it out. And I do a lot of drafts, like, and I think that might come from my video editing background, because I've been doing that for such a long time, and you just keep chipping away and chipping away. getting rid of all the stuff that doesn't work and rearranging things in certain orders and stuff. Mm-hmm. So it I still don't have like a process that I do. Like every one of my stories has kind of been dogs kind of came fast. Mm-hmm. That one really, once I got, like I said, I had that last line, and once I came up with the scenario and the character, and I just put threw him in this situation, it kind of, it went pretty well. But I've had other, the Welcome to Forever, I went back and forth and back and forth and back and forth to that one. So I don't have I wish I could say I have, you know, I sit down from, and all the writers too that I've talked to say you should write every day, and that it's completely correct. You write, and a lot of them say you treat it like a job. You should sit down at the same time every day, sit at the keyboard or at, you know, at your pad of paper or whatever. And I haven't been able to develop that routine yet, you know, because I just finished my master's degree, so that was getting in the way. Thank you very much. And then work and stuff. So I do it whenever I can find the time, and I'm not disciplined enough to say I'm going to get up at, you know, whatever, 6 o'clock in the morning, sit down and write for an hour before I start work and that kind of thing. So I do need to get into a better habit, I guess.
As someone who writes too, I understand that people always prescribe to us the get into a process that fits and things like that. But sometimes you just got to fit it in when it works for you. Exactly. You know, if you're driving down the street and all of a sudden the idea hits you and you rip open that fast food wrapper and just start writing ideas out on the wrapper or the bag or whatever, that's what you do.
Yep. You know? Yep. I was talking with Paul Tremblay about that. You know, Paul Tremblay, he wrote, The Cabin at the End of the World, which just came out as a movie earlier this year, and he just had a bunch. Speaking of short fiction, his short fiction is incredible. But he's also from Massachusetts, and I was lucky enough to be talking to him once, and he is also a high school math teacher, which is quite a weird juxtaposition to write horror fiction and also teach high school math. But he said he would write, you know, when he could find the time in between classes, or sometimes if his class was taking a test, he would you know, write, you know, a page or two. So yeah, you're right. You fit it in where you can.
Yeah,
and that's just what you do.
So, as far as other than that short story coming out, do you have anything else that you can think of as possible future stories?
Yeah, I'm working on my first novel-length project, and it's extremely intimidating to me to be doing something that I know is going to be a lot. You know, it's going to have multiple characters in it. You know, I don't know how many words it'll end up being, but I'm shooting for it to be a novel-length story. It's also a vampire story, which is funny because I'm not much of a vampire fan. I mean, I like, you know, your Draculas and your Interview with a Vampire and stuff, but I'm not really. I don't go down to a deep dive of vampire fiction, or, you know, I like the vampire movies and stuff. But I have been reading a lot of vampire books lately just to see what other authors have done with the tropes of the vampire. So I'm working on something that I don't want to give it away, but it's taxing for me to have keep track of characters and a long plot and subplots and B stories it's intimidating is the best word to describe it right now, but that's what I'm working on.
I would want to ask is next time, I guess, when you come to talk about that one, is how do you decide, because I know there's books out there where they start off a B plot and then all of a sudden it goes nowhere, right? It gets somewhere, it gets dropped, but there's got to be a reason for that. So I guess I want to put that, a thumbtack on that, and we'll come back next time you have that story, so we could talk about that process and the difference between the novelette and the novel and the short story and all that, what your process is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That now I have to finish it, because now we're going to have to talk about that. So there now you forced my hand.
That's what Saul does. He makes people makes them and finish their things.
And you get a sign here.
I need it.
Drop all your blood.
Oh, that guy.
But no, yeah, I'm definitely interested in figuring out or talking to people about their different processes for different kind of types of projects. Normally, what we talk about or talk to or graphic novels and comic creators, and they.
Oh, that's cool. I'm a big fan of the graphic novels.
They're the process, and Greg has his own series as well, and I feel like. I hear pretty much this. It's not exactly the same thing, but you know, the same kind of type of typical process for that, and it sounds kind of the same for books. But there is got to be some sort of difference there. So I'm interested in knowing more about that and kind of dissecting that part.
Yeah. What's cool? What I find interesting. I've never done it, but I've been reading comics and graphic novels all my life. Is the relationship between the artist and the writer in that format is, you know, you're using your artwork to visually tell the story, so you sometimes don't need as many words, and that relationship is very cool when it all works perfectly.
Yeah, it's I can tell you from my own experience when you're working with an artist that is willing to tell you to take your words and just put them in the back seat because their art can tell the story better. At least in my situation, I've said, you know what? I think you know best. I will take those words and shove them back in the can. and I've done that a few times on some stuff, or sometimes artists will just, I've had the very good fortune of working with some pretty decent artists that have like a way of just being, they speak Greg, and they're just like, hey, dummy, you got an idea that doesn't work. And I'm like, all right, let's figure it out.
Yeah.
So, no, but I think that's really what it comes down to, is that good communication, being able to have, working with somebody as a team, you know, and not, if you are doing a project and it's like, hey, I paid you to do the thing, you're going to get what you paid for. And if it comes out wonky, that's because they're like, I did what you asked.
You want someone to be, you know, you want people should be paid for their work. Absolutely. But you don't want them to be doing it when it comes to something like that. You know, creative work, you still want them to put in some their art part of their brain, mm-hmm. not just the craft part of the brain doing what I'm told type of thing.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've always, and I can expand on this, like, expand on it a lot, but I mean, just having that team mindset and making sure that everybody, at least on the projects that I've been on, has a good feeling is, hey, we're all doing this together. Everybody has a voice. Everybody has an opinion as to what works and what doesn't. And sometimes, like you said, the marriage of words and art, sometimes the art tells fantastic stories that the words don't need to be there for. And yeah. It's like, yeah, actions, wait, speak louder than words. Yeah. So we get a lot of good action sequences.
Cool.
Sound effects. Now that's where it's at.
So like, is there anything that we want to, anything else we want to talk about? Anything specific to writing?
Not that I can think of off the top of my head. I'm really enjoying it. I'm having a lot of fun. I've met a ton of great people, in the world of publishing and writing and horror. It's funny because horror writers are some of the nicest people I've met. And yet the stories we create, you know, we're ripping people to shreds and murder and mayhem and monsters. But I think we probably are able to get mm-hmm. our frustrations out on the page that way. So when you meet us, you know, we're the first to say, hey, how are you? And how you doing? And be nice. And everyone's been super cool. I haven't had any, there's jerks out there, but there always are. But for the most part, it's, all the horror people are really cool.
Everyone that I've talked to, I think I don't remember anyone that really, other than maybe an actor or two that I've talked to. That's a different, whole different side of the story though. that I've talked to seems to be very nice. Well, great. Sure. Mike, it was great getting to know you. Hopefully next time we can talk a little bit more about the story itself. I know this one, it's not as long of a story, but And if you start talking really into it, you can give it away. I recommend it. So people, if you either have Kindle Unlimited, you can get it on there. You can buy it on there. And you can also buy it on Amazon, and I'll make sure to leave the links on the description so that people can get to it.
I'm super excited to see what comes next. Keep it coming, Mike.
All right.
Well, once again, Mike, thank you very much for taking the time to come on.
My pleasure.
With that, we'll go ahead and leave it there, guys. We'll see you guys next time on Nerd from the Crypt.
Are you a fan of things that go bump in the night? Chills up your spine, paralyzed by fright, thrilled by horror at the center of a chat. Then welcome to the Nerds from the Crypt podcast.